Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have an intro, a quick tourney report with the winner of the Laval tournament will be coming to join us. We're going to review across the seven seas, and then we're going to have some closing comments.
Seven kingdoms. Close,
yeah,
though.
Across the seven kingdoms.
All right, episode 19. It has been a news-filled 2 weeks, so we have quite a lot to go over. Yeah. But John has sad news that he wants to start with.
Yeah, so it seems that not only is Mealy not getting a card design at Gen Con, I actually have written confirmation from FFG that Mealy is not a champion-level event.
Oh, so it's basically, despite being called a championship on your ticket, it's just a side event?
All Mealy is now just side events.
So you don't even get the credit of having won a championship. You can be a championship-level player.
Wow. Yeah, like Will, you could be the second championship-level player in the world. That's pretty good.
Actually, hang on. You're not even that, because it's not even a championship tournament. I mean,
well, the ticket stub says championship, right?
No, but it's not a championship, because the response for why it doesn't get a card design is actually only championship events can get card designs.
I see.
Yeah.
You can check that out on Twitter.
However, it does have some prize support.
Yeah, I mean, it has
and
crappy support.
I know there were complaints, especially from the French on CardGameDB, saying that they tried to reach out to FFG, or actually to their distributor first, to try and get prize support for their melee component of their French national championships, and were told that they couldn't even get what FFG was providing for Origins and Gen Con, which was at least something, if not particularly impressive. So it looks like there's definitely a dwindling support from the organized play side of things. I don't know if that has any reflection with the team designing the game or anything like that.
I would say Melee is completely gone from organized play. It's basically a side event. I think Draft will be more prestigious than it next year. I really see Melee just going away.
I think that is a mistake.
Me too. I'm really sad.
One of the appeals of this game, relative to the other LCGs, that helps it stand out is that multiplayer format. And you know, we play it basically every week at our nights, game nights. It's a part of the way we play it. I think the very least they can do is these French people who are asking say, yeah, we'll give you the same kits that we've been using for our old tournaments, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I can understand in some ways that if they push Draft as the other official event, they'll be selling more cards and making more money, because they'll be selling more Draft packs.
Well, that is the other big news, right? This was sort of last minute, but we now found out that Gen Con's going to have a Draft, and FFG news doesn't often catch me off guard, but boy did that.
Oh, it did? I was expecting it after the announcement at Worlds that there would be some kind of draft coming up very soon. Now, I didn't think, you know, maybe Gen Con, but I thought if they were going to announce a draft before Worlds, that Gen Con would be the place to do it, because they normally have products head of sales. Like, I actually expect the line box there. I expect the draft packs there, because they always have their stuff so far ahead at Gen Con.
I'm not 100% certain the line box will be there, but yeah, the Gen Con draft that they announced just this late seems to imply that they weren't planning on having it before, or they couldn't get seating, or however it was. But
they might have been planning, but they weren't sure if they could do it. And I heard they had abysmal numbers on Conquest for the tournament. So,
for me, the big thing is that I knew it was going to happen at Worlds. I figured they were going to launch it at Worlds. It's in-house printing, so I figured that would be their sort of pilot for the thing. I was really surprised to see it come to Gen Con. And I'm excited, too, because almost certainly the draft packs will have cards from this second cycle, maybe even the third cycle, the Lion's Box. So we may not know what they are, because they'll probably be numbered by draft card numbers, but there should be some spoilers hidden in there too, which could be kind of fun.
I wonder if they listen to us about our alternate idea suggestions, having sort of like full bleeds hidden amongst the packs. That would make it even cooler. But
oh man, that would be such a great thing. In fact, if you support this whole idea of full bleeds in the draft pack or alternate art in some random form in the draft pack. Like maybe, I think Alex was saying, like if there was just five rares or something out of the whole series that were alternate art, leave a comment on this cast so that FFG can see it, because it's in-house printing. We can pressure them into doing it if they're not doing it already.
Yeah, and we know they've done full bleed with the same, or sorry, like alternate templating art before. The Netrunner Champion decks were all cards that already existed. They just took the existing art and made it for the full card. And I don't even like cards like that as a general rule. I really like the borders and the templating, but having something different in those packs would be fantastic, and we know they have the tools to do it.
Exactly.
In fact, Sean's going to volunteer to do the templating for them.
Right, Sean?
Yeah, sure. FFG, I'll give you my PayPal billing information. wire me some money, and I'll do whatever you want.
It's a very special brand of volunteering.
You would do it just for the game, though, too, right, Sean? And, like, 20 of each of the unique cards?
Yeah, I'd do that. We can make a deal.
Other FFG news that came out, one that's somewhat interesting, is that they have been, just this last weekend, pushing a collectible dice-based game, a sort of Dice Master one, called Star Wars Destiny.
Yeah, I saw that. I heard scary things about Star Wars as well as, like, the LCG as well as Conquest. And I'm hoping that this dice-based game is not replacing the LCG, but I get this feeling like they're going to explore some CCG again to see if they can make better cash off it.
I have a feeling, I've heard this from the underground, that Asmodee is not happy with the LCG sales, and that they are pushing for the CCG model. That I think that there might be applying some pressure on FFG. That's unsubstantiated, this is just all rumor mill, but it makes sense. I mean, if they're not seeing the profits they want out of the LCG, the CCG is the next obvious model. You're making the exact same contributions with the cards and the testing. All you have to do is, pocket more money. Displease your fans, of course, because many FFG fans came over abandoning the CCG model. They were told that, you know, their cards would be good and that they would get these fixed packs. What do you think, Alex?
I think that there were very good financial reasons for them to switch from CCGs to LCGs. Those weren't just sort of philosophical reasons about equality of card pool and things like that, or design. There were financial incentives because the randomizing process was actually fairly expensive, because the CCG market was kind of crowded. CCG's lifespans are actually fairly short. You could probably name the only five I can think of that lasted more than 5 years. So that
I can name six or seven.
You can name six or seven? I would say we have L5R, which is gone now, Magic, which is still there, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, and Vampire.
Force of Will.
Force of Will? I don't even know what that is.
It's super anime.
Oh, well, that's probably why I don't know what that is. but the actual Destiny website says, you know, what does this mean for the LCG model, and tells us it means nothing. You know, this is a completely different thing, and so on. But I would not be surprised if this was their foray into the sort of collectible thing to see what the market looks like. I don't necessarily think that we'll be seeing any changes for Game of Thrones ever, really. But, you know, it's possible that some of the other games need to be reinvented in a different format if they find that they can compete now that they have this global supply chain that they didn't have before. So, yeah, it's something to keep an eye on.
Because Asmodee has been just eating the world of supply chain. They just keep acquiring and acquiring, it seems.
Yeah, you saw that. They got, they probably call them Z-Man games, but Z-Man games and Plaid Hat games.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a big sort of agglomeration now with a lot of weight to throw around.
I'm hoping Plaid Hat means we're going to see a little bit more of Phoenix.
Ashes of Phoenix was Plaid Hat? No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I wonder.
But you'll have to keep up on the news this coming week with Gen Con.
Yeah, I plan actually to play some Ashes. I might go play a tournament.
Oh, really? I didn't know you had the cards.
I don't. But Dan does.
Ah.
And there's sealed boxes for it, too.
Thrones-related stuff. I've specifically seen that the Lions box is now marked as shipping. That doesn't necessarily give us a release date. It's not yet showing up as having a street date on our distributor's web page, nor is the second chapter pack. So don't know exactly when that'll be, although I would be extremely surprised if the second chapter pack was not available at Gen Con, although not necessarily for wide release.
Well, I think that's all the news, unless someone else has something else.
Did we talk about the spoilers that came out recently?
We have not. I love these spoilers. So tell me about them.
Well, one of them is a named reprint from the first edition. So it changed around, but like the name is there, the concept is there. And the other one is a rebirth of a card that had existed before. So it's the Venomous Blade and the Starfall Cavalry / once were Viper's Bannerman.
I would even say that Dolores Ed, that was spoiled earlier this week as well, is basically a sort of reimagining of Jumping Caitlin. Mm-hmm.
That kind of makes me sad. When are they going to come up with a new idea, new concept? I'm waiting for it.
Look at that Venomous Blade. I really like what they've done there.
This is taking a Shadows card, reinventing
it. It's a different, you know, it's the delayed poison mechanic, but it's non-terminal, so it will repeat itself. It can still machine gun, but you have to put the gold into it. Lots of really neat design decisions, like do you marshal it so that you kill the thing before it becomes claim soak? Do you ambush it in after you've done military claim to give you that surprise plus one strength and then get a kill after claim? You know, there are reasons to do both. I really like everything about the card except the art.
I'm not saying the card isn't good. It's a good card. It's, like you said, interesting, but I'd like to see some new mechanics coming out soon.
John, but I mean, let's look at it.
I'm greedy.
They did the mountain and heads on spikes. Those are great and well-beloved new mechanics, right? Not high variance or disgusting.
I'm just thinking back. Maybe it's where I entered the LCG, but you know, I entered with the idea of like Maesters. So it was like Shadows, then it was North Agendas, then it was Maesters, then it was Naval, and it just there was like every new.
You forgot
series.
The Jeast and Melee keywords.
Jeast and Melee, yeah, exactly. Sorry. Every new section seemed to have another cool new thing, and it, you know, I was hoping for that being revealed in this.
I think we're still seeing that. I think we're seeing, you know, this last cycle was the non-terminal attachments and exploring some of the space that could be used for.
That was in the main, that we'd never seen the main box.
There were no non-terminal negative attachments in the main box.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're seeing things like reserve manipulations and the Night Gathers coming out in a few packs. So I think that there's still room within this core to show off what the core set can do before you start introducing new mechanics. I would not expect to see new mechanics. I don't know, maybe CP3, Cycle 3, maybe Cycle 4. I think there's still a lot of room to play without increasing the complexity and starting a complexity creep. And it's also worth noting that you have to keep in mind rotation when you're introducing a new mechanic. Yep. So I certainly wouldn't introduce it in the first two cycles, which will rotate out at the same time.
God, Alex, you and your logic.
I know.
My gut says I want a new mechanic for fun. And don't let your logic get in the way of my fun.
All right. The winter and summer agendas is not a new mechanic?
I guess it's because we saw winter and summer in 1.0.
Oh, so what you want is a new mechanic.
Yeah, I want a new mechanic.
It's not an old new mechanic.
No, I don't want to. That's what I was complaining about. The repeat of old cards. The repeat of old mechanics.
Yeah. Not a keyword where you take gold off of your opponent's house. Or faction, I should say. Or plot. Plot. That's where you keep your gold.
Yeah, well, not according to the rules, though.
Really?
You keep your gold in a gold pool.
But your gold
pool is separate from the treasury.
On the plot, couldn't it?
It can be, but it's not. If there was a card that discarded all tokens from your plot card, it wouldn't discard all your gold, because
true.
According to the game, your gold is not there.
Well, I'm glad they make these distinctions, because I'm sure someone in a tournament would try to push for that.
Yep. So just because we've had a lot of listener complaints that cannot tell John and Sean apart, today we're joined by an additional guest, called John. So say hi, John.
Hello there.
Okay, say hi, Sean.
Hi.
And say hi, other John.
I am Dark Nodge.
You're Dark Nodge. Okay, that makes things easier.
I was kind of expecting John to say hi when you said, say hi, Sean. To confuse things even more.
Yeah.
It would have worked.
I'm not like that, Sean.
So guest John, then. Guest John, why are you here today? Why do we have you on?
I'm John Gobe. I'm one of the admins of the AGOT 2 second edition Facebook groups, and just recently, last weekend, I attended the Game of Thrones regional in Laval, Quebec at BD Cosmos, and I won.
He took me out to do it. It was horrible. It made me cry.
Took you out in the finals, too, yeah.
Yeah, you look really miserable in that picture.
That was a sad panda picture.
Well, the funniest part about the picture is I actually had to explain how large you are compared to me, and people assumed that I was standing like 3 or 4 feet behind you in the picture, and I was like, no, we're standing like shoulder to shoulder, and he is just, you know, and 18 inches taller than me or something. Yes, exactly.
So we tried to do something interesting, John. Well, at least I did. I tried to convince you to do something interesting at this regional.
You sure
did. I really appreciate this. I told John that we should ID the final.
Yeah.
Well, it was the last tournament that IDs were allowed in. How awesome. How much banter would it be to ID the final? I even told him he could have like all the prizes. I didn't care. I just wanted to ID the final for the sake of IDing. Maybe it was because of fear, because I knew what was going to happen if we played. Because when we did play, and I played my best, John took me out. He just got such an early lead. It was brutal.
Thankfully, because after you turned the board state around, it wasn't looking so pretty for me.
He was a gentleman, and since he's not going to Gen Con, and though he is going to Canadian Nationals, he'll be TOing it, or helping at least organize it, that he passed down the buy to me, which is awesome, because I'll use it at Gen Con.
Is that legal?
It is legal.
Okay. I wasn't sure, because like, I don't know if you had to technically say that like, you want
it. No, if they can't use it, or if they've won another one, they can pass it down. It's in the tournament rules.
Currently, it is legal. You can't pass it to whomever you choose. You can just decline it, and it goes to the next person.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So maybe we'll start where we tend to start with these tournaments. What were you guys expecting going in? Were you expecting this to be a test run for Gen Con? Were you expecting it to be a very competitive tournament? What kind of houses? Maybe starting with you, guest John.
I didn't really know what to expect. I had only played in one regional before in Holt, Michigan, and did rather poorly when I had two games where I never saw a single economy location. And then I TO'd the Hamilton regional. So I hadn't really been – I've never won a Thrones tournament before, whether it be a game night kit or not. I always end up coming in second or something like that. So I didn't have a huge amount of confidence, but I figured that, you know, it was the last regional of the season, and it was out at BD Cosmos, which is my friend Julian runs the place. So I figured I'd go out and bring up the numbers a bit and help out. I was doing some testing on Octagon with my friend the few nights before. And I was honestly expecting a lot of Stark, but with the success or relative success of that Stark Wall of Dudes deck, I call it, from the Battle of Blackwater, where with the two marching orders and that sort of thing, where they just throw up guys all over the board. And so my question was, you know, given that I was playing Lannister, and I always play Lannister, I always did, even since the core set, I just needed to find a way to make sure that I could get my kill effects off. And so I did a little bit of teching against Stark, as they call it, where I made sure I had a Winterplot in, because if you want to get past Winterfell, having a Winterplot is the easiest way to do it, instead of having to rely on a treachery or something like that. And then I, of course, had my treacheries and some nightmares as well, just in case, because I figure it's a bit more versatile, because, you know, if you're having trouble with Tyene or Miri or somebody like that, between Milks of the Poppy and treachery and nightmares, chances are you'll probably have something that you can, you know, stall a turn or stop one attack or one kill effect off with.
So you were expecting a lot of Stark, and that definitely did not turn out to be the case. And that was probably the thing that jumped out at me the most looking at the stats afterwards, was
yes.
Where I would have expected 30-35% Stark going in, it was not the case.
There was three, and yeah, the highest Stark's place from. One came in 15th or 16th, I believe, a local guy named Justin.
Yeah,
I think everyone was expecting Stark. I know I was expecting Stark. I was actually going to play Stark initially. This is another card deck story. So we're on the way down, and John's telling me, and we're basically confirming, like, okay, it's going to be a lot of Stark. You know, Stark is definitely going to be there in heavy presence. They've done well recently. They've won Origins. There's going to be some decks out there that you can easily either net deck, or you can put together a pretty decent Stark deck right out of the deluxe. So I didn't want to play in the mirror match. And I also had this other deck that we hadn't really tested. So I was thinking, as you asked in the beginning, was this like a test for Gen Con? I thought I'd get some stats for Gen Con. So I ended up playing a Baratheon Sun deck, basically a very NPE stall deck. And my first matchup was against a Night's Watch No Challenges Wall deck. It was a lot of fun. Sarcasm. Every single match went to time. Every single match that tournament. The cool thing is, though, the deck is great. I controlled the matches for about 90-95% of the time, where I was winning and I felt in control. Literally what happens is the big surprise of the deck, but basically it ran two Wildfire. So the surprise was the second Wildfire. I'd Wildfire like turn three, tear the board down, and then they'd flood their hand, and I'd Wildfire again turn five or six.
And that would be a surprise.
Nobody's doing that, right? It catches you off guard. And each time I do that, I return the negative, the icon removal attachments, and then I replay them on the characters that are alive. So effectively each game, they would take their two best characters and they'd put them to the side because they'd either have no icons or they'd be knelt the whole time. There's something stopping them from using their favorite characters. I played a Greyjoy Crossing deck and he had Asha and Balin out the whole time, but they were just put to the side because they both had been completely stripped. So it was a lot of fun. It couldn't close at all, no renown. I think I ended up going 3-3, which I consider to be decent considering how slow and unwinnable that deck is.
I actually played against it just yesterday at my Game Night Kits, because I had built a similar deck and handed it to someone else. And I managed to Area's Gift to move attachments around. So my Caitlyn had five negative attachments, and she had two military icons, but it was a good place to store the attachments. So,
wait a second. So do you often bring a deck to the Game Night Kit to give to other people that you have the exact counter for with Arya's Gift?
No. This just I think I was playing someone else's deck, the Stark deck, too, because I don't think I have Arya's Gift in any of my Starks.
I'd like to do that at tournaments, though, if you could be like, okay, play this deck, and I'll play this deck.
And I'll play the counter.
In the Conquest community, when the spring kits were getting to be, like, there was a lot of spring kits that had been run and people stopped showing up to them, we were talking about doing a tournament where you bring a deck that hopefully only you know how to pilot, because for the, I can't remember if it was the first half or the second half, but for one half of the tournament, when you sit down across from your opponent, you just switch decks and play the deck that they brought, and they play the deck you brought. And then for the second half of the tournament, you play the deck that you brought.
It's kind of like a driver versus car. We used to do that in mm-hmm. Thrones, where we'd build a deck and hand it to someone else and then play other people's decks throughout the tournament. And the winner, the person whose deck won the most, would get points, as well as the person who won the most games.
Interesting. So the best car and the best driver win something?
I expected some Stark, but more than expecting Stark, I expected a lot of counter to Stark, which is why I kind of said to Sean, you probably don't want to play a Stark deck. I'm expecting a lot of Martell Lion, and I expect a lot of Martell Lion at Gen Con.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I expect a lot of Martell at Gen Con, because I think it's probably the easiest counter to Stark. And Stark Fealty is probably one of the strongest decks in the meta right now. It's great that it has a counter, but it makes things a little bit rock, paper, scissors. So if I was going to Gen Con, I wouldn't actually be teching for Stark. I'd be teching for something that can beat Martell. That's a little bit that's my hint to listeners for Gen Con.
What do you mean, if you're going to Gen Con?
Well, I'm going to Gen Con, and I'm teching against Martell. So I would do the same. And people say, like, how do you tech against Martell? Run more Intrigue icons. That's an easy one. Make your cost curve a little bit over two, because they liked using that Ill and Pain, that kind of stuff.
Little birds, man. Little birds.
So you played Targ as a tech against Martell for...
No, I play Targ because I let the build group I'm in tell me what to play, because I didn't want to take any of our top decks for Gen Con to the tournament. And everyone was really, really sure that Targ, and you can hold me to this, Alex, is not Tier 1.
Targ is scary.
And
me.
So you came second in this tournament with a horrible, horrible Targ deck.
No, I didn't say it was horrible. It's definitely a good Targ deck. It's a solid Targ deck. Just Targ's not Tier 1.
Oh, he pointed that out to me before we played the finals. He said, I didn't bring a Tier 1 deck today, so, you know, we'll see how this goes.
I wasn't really playing a competitive deck against you, and you seemed so keen to play, like, a serious game, and I wanted to give you a serious game, but it's tough when your deck's not serious, you know?
To be fair, John often goes to the finals with decks that were purported to be crap, and then mm-hmm. pilots masterfully. So again, car versus pilot, right?
Or turn, yep. I should say.
Yeah. Well, we had a great match, actually, and we won't talk too much about it because it's going to be on Rob St. John's YouTube channel, but it's quite a grind. Like, we played a lot of plots there, John.
I think we were on plot 9 or something, or 10?
Yeah. Miri was doing work for me, except for the treachery nightmares, but after that, she was doing work.
Yeah, it was. There was definitely a turning point in my mind for when things started to go a little bit bad for me. But I won't mention it. But let's just say it involved a Crown of Gold.
So, John, do you want to tell us quickly what your deck was trying to do with the target line?
Kill shit, burn it. Yeah. It was like a very standard targ line. It had a couple Dannys, a couple Miri, some Khal Drogo, a bunch of military icons, and burn.
Was it running two marched? Was it running?
It was running a marched, and it was running some put, which came in this fantastic comeback. The put to the sword I had in the deck just made a huge difference. But actually, I'll link the whole deck in the cast for people to take a look at.
I did hear there was a little bit of controversy at the tournament. There was a player who had not filled out the entirety of their deck list.
There was two.
Yes.
Controversies. Two big controversies. I'd love to actually hear your opinion on this, Alex. So if you were judging and you got a deck list, and on the deck list it specifically said there were 61 cards in the deck, but when you counted, there was only 60 recorded.
It was 59, actually.
Oh, it was 59 recorded?
Yeah, there was no number written next to Theon.
Right, but he only had two Theons.
Yeah.
So it was, that's what made it to 61. So if you counted, you actually got to 60, not 61.
No, I think what he's saying is there were 59 numbered cards in the deck list.
Oh, and there was – I see,
but
yes.
But Theon didn't have a number next to him, so you didn't –
Correct, J.F.
And to further complicate it, if you don't include those two Theons, he only had 11 banner cards, which made his deck illegal.
Ah, I see.
So he had – basically what he had done is for making it pretty or something like that, he had all of his characters in a row. And then he left space and put all of his locations, and he left space and put all his attachments and so on. And so I think Theon was like the last character. So it didn't stand out to him that there was no number written in that row, because there was two rows below it that were also blank. So he just missed writing the number of Theon Greyjoys he was playing in his deck.
What would you do, Alex?
That's a tough one. There's the store championship mentality, and then there's the regional mentality. And this being a regional, I would probably assume that the default number of cards, if one is listed, is one. And so I would turn over his second one, but still allow it to be basically fulfill his banner restriction.
Would you give him a loss?
If it was during a match, yes. That I found
so
out.
So they gave him a loss in rounds. His next match.
That I'm not necessarily entirely sure.
They completed his deck list as he specified verbally, and allowed him to play the 61 cards, the two copies of Theon, and then just gave him a loss for the following round.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. And these situations are not covered. We don't have a set of floor rules. And what I'm saying would be potentially different from what someone else would do. But my first instinct would be to say, you know, you have to adhere to the deck list. So my assumption would be that there's one Theon on that deck, because if Theon is listed, he has to be at least one copy. The fact that there's two means that's not matching the deck list, and that card would be flipped over. But I wouldn't then consider the deck illegal because it had 11 Greyjoys.
If you do that, then you have to disqualify him entirely because his deck doesn't fulfill.
No, it still matches.
I would still say that the face down cards satisfy the banner requirement.
I understand that.
If one of them was face down, his banner requirement was still met because he had 13 Greyjoy cards.
Even better.
Luckily.
Oh, okay. It wasn't the two required to make.
Yeah, that's okay. Correct.
It was one Alex, required, I see.
Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, that's what I would have done too, and that's what I said at the time. There was a second instance where someone didn't write down their house and agenda. All the rest of their deck was perfect. Except for their house and their faction and their agenda. What would you do there?
He didn't list his faction and agenda on the death list.
Correct.
His name was there, though.
His name was there.
Is that?
So you could find out who it was.
That's correct.
My name wasn't on mine.
There was actually somebody who didn't have their name on it, other than John, I think, too.
Oh, other than me, too.
That is a tough one. Because there I feel...
I mean, the deck list pretty...
Right, you can tell by the loyal cards exactly what the faction. There were Fury of the Kraken type plots, or thingies if your opponent's house card. Or,
yeah, or like a Targ Lion deck that has no loyal cards but has Dracarys in it, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that case with the no faction, no agenda listing is that one. Yeah, I mean the deck list isn't accurate, and I'd probably have to treat it Oh, that one's tough. I really don't like that. Everything says that technically that should, you know, by the rules, if we're following the same thing we applied for the previous one, then we basically have to say that those cards weren't in the deck list and remove them, and then there's no way you can play the deck with that, and so he would be disqualified from the tournament. That would be what a strict reading of the rules would say. But I would feel so bad about a strict DQ from that, if the deck list is otherwise accurate, that I would probably try and fudge my way into some other ruling. But I'm telling you, that's fudging, because the strict reading of the rules would say you try and make the deck legal with removing the cards that are not on the list, and if you can't, then you have to DQ. And that's what the rules would say. So that sucks, though.
So you remove the Lannister house card and the banner, the agenda, and the deck is not legal, and that's that.
Yeah, that would be the technical reading of the rules, yeah.
Wow, you see, I thought that was, from my perspective, when I looked at those deck lists, the missing house faction was less atrocious than the missing Theon in my mind. But they both received the same punishment. They both lost.
That's what I was thinking too, yeah.
I don't think the error is any worse. I really don't.
No.
I just think that the way the rules have to handle it winds up being more penalizing by default.
The problem is letting any exceptions in.
Yeah.
In the future, if this does actually open to some exploit, you have to apply the same rule fairly across the board.
Yeah, it was a tough situation for Julian. He was the TO. And I think, you know, basically we sort of took a look at the – it was between rounds. We took a look at the tournament documents and sort of came to the idea that both of the decks were technically illegal, and by the strictest of rules, both players could be disqualified for it. Not wanting to be a giant douche, we ruled that there should be some sort of penalty, but not one that is tournament ending. So the players both seemed rather, aside from the fact that it more or less put them out of the cut, players were very happy that they got to continue playing, but of course don't think that anybody that was involved really ever considered just making them DQ'd for the tournament in the first place.
Right,
so.
Yeah, that's not the end. I mean, that sucks. I guess the moral of the story is print off your bloody deck list.
So one of them had printed off their deck list and just missed the top part.
Yeah, he cut and pasted it from Thrones DB, but started two lines too low, apparently.
Yeah. All right. Less rules, more tournament. Sean, John, why don't you tell me a little bit about your games? Anything memorable happened to you in the tournament? Anything great about the decks you played?
Wait, Sean John's here? I love his clothes.
Yeah. That's both of you, one or the other.
Oh, I guess I'll take it. Games that I remember, I played a Lord of the Crossing deck, Greyjoy Lord of the Crossing. My deck is hilarious against Lord of the Crossing. You will never get your third challenge. It's icon removal and kneel. So I have maximum control over what goes through and what happens. That one was recorded. Actually, three of my games were recorded by Rob. It just so happened I was sitting at the same table three games in a row.
So that whole Wildfire, the second one being a surprise, is a surprise to no one now.
At that point in the I had gone to time every single time, so everyone had come by and watched one of my games at some point. So I think everyone was aware of the second Wildfire. That said, I wasn't anywhere near the top, so I wasn't really worried about being scouted. I find you only really scout when you're, you know, in top position. Not that I scout, but you as in
One only scouts.
The royal one only scouts when they are worried about getting into top 8. Exactly. You go ahead, John. I'll think about more games as well.
I think the two, aside from the stuff in the top 8, the two most memorable moments for me was in the first round. I was playing against Throne Runner, and he was playing his Greyjoy Fealty deck. And I had him the very first round. It was ridiculous. I had Put to the Sword, Tears of Lease, and two Treacheries, and I burned through like a. I Tears'd Asha and then Put to the Sword just in case because he had an Iron Mines out, and then Treachery'd the Iron Mines just in case he had a Risen from the Sea because he had the Sea Stone Chair and I was going to get my Fast Eddie killed. But later on in the game, he had two raiding longships out, and he had Theon, and Theon was doing most of the work for him. And I had Fast Eddie and Arya were my main military strengths, and I, for some reason, put a bodyguard on Fast Eddie, thinking that I wanted to keep him safe from Sea Stone Chair. But then I realized that I now have one character that has an attachment that can stop raiding longships, but he can be stealthed.
Right.
And one character that can't be stealthed but doesn't have an attachment. So you know, over the next two turns, my Arya got killed by sea stone shares, and it got kind of scary, but I managed to still pull it out. I had another game where I had the dream Lannister set. I guess I should specify I was playing Lannister Wolf. So I had the dream set up. I had the Tywin, I had the cost reducer, I had the Rose Road. And the rest of my hand was a little bit questionable. There was no characters and there were three limited cards in my hand. But I just didn't want to give up on the dream setup. And I figured I would get some stuff when I, you know, refresh my hand back up to seven or whatever. And I didn't. I kept pulling like events. And I think at one point in time, I had five limited cards in my hand. And I probably saw six characters the entire game. But I kept pulling, you know, like when I had no military claim or I had one chud and I didn't want to get marched, I'd pull a dupe for one of the two big guys that I had on the board or something like that. And I managed, Tywin had like eight power at the end of the game because half the rounds I drew no characters. So I'm sitting there with eight gold on my plot, and Tywin is a beast, so he could defend against everything. But that was a scary game, and I still managed to pull that one off too, but it was definitely memorable.
It's a testament to Lannister that they can sit there with Tywin, block things, win Dom, and still win the game. You don't need any other characters other than Tywin. You know, if we get a way to get Tywin to have stealth, like a Sirio that's more reliable, that's my deck. It's just Tywin.
Yeah, if you could put Tywin and Pike in the same deck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be a DQ. Yeah.
I'm thankful for the loyal system now that I think of it.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
And what about you, Darknosh?
I went to the tournament not thinking I was going to do super well because I was playing Targ and I knew that the Toronto folks were coming up in mass. And it's actually a highly competitive meta right now in Toronto. They've been really, you know, playing a lot, playtesting together. They have some really great players, including, you know, the kid, Rob St. John, and John here as well. I figured it was going to be a pretty tough field. I had some good games with my Targ Lion, but I have to say the one I enjoyed the most was playing against one of my friends from Ottawa, Adrian, who just basically
trounced
me for the first six plots of a game where I had basically, you know, one strength reducers and two costers on the table while his Tyene killed over and over again all my good characters until the seventh plot, where the stars aligned for me. I had a crown of gold in my hand for quite a while, and his wildfire went off at the same time as my marched. So I got to go first, use his wildfire, use my own march to bring him down to two characters, go first, of course, and get a crown of gold off, and my one military icon was able to clear his board. And then from then on, I was able to recover and come back from the game in three plots.
You've heard that comebacks are impossible, right?
You know, I have to disagree. In several of my games, I was in a really bad place with my deck early on and managed to, through wildfire or marched, come back on a game. And I almost got to come back on John. It would have been great. It was so close. I think we were very, very close of that game tourney as well. So people that say that, you know, comebacks aren't possible, I think they're giving up a little too early. And I think we talked about this before, Alex, where, yeah, you know, you play it out even if it doesn't look good. Sometimes you can just top deck the nuts. This game, the card pool is still a little small. Because of that, there's a little bit more variance than you would have normally in Thrones, and that'll go away in a, you know, maybe 6 months from now. But in the meantime, you can still get these bombs that can shift board in just such a significant way with the right plots, and you can get back in this game. So just play it out, keep trying, slow them down.
Run Varus. I've been loving Varus recently.
Oh, Varus is really good in the current meta, except against Stark. You don't want to try to Varus a Stark player because they draw better than you. But
not without characters, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
They have these thing called the Gates.
Yeah, the Gates. Have you heard of this card? This is why their hands are always full.
But it still only challenges draw.
Yeah, run three of those, and then you Varus, and then you still have eight cards, you know? Yeah. And then they have this thing called Summer. You've seen Summer?
I've seen Summer.
That's Summer the key to the Stark deck. Like, don't realize otherwise. That card is freaking good. That card is so ridiculously powerful. Yeah, well,
it's true.
That's my opinion. I think that card alone is what makes Stark competitive.
Well, my biggest thing is when you're playing against a Stark deck, you generally need to get rid of Bran before you can do any interesting things. And if you can finally get rid of Bran, and then they can just be like, hey, Bran's back, even though I killed him, it's sad.
Yep.
So I could see it.
I would even say farther. I'd say that what you want to bring back 80% of the time is probably Arya. She is so good for claim soak, and she just lets you keep stabilizing your board presence even under really heavy pressure, that if she dies and then you can summer or bring her back and then play her, you just got three claim soak, and that just lets you really be defensive with all your other Stark main characters. Mm-hmm.
Septim Ordain, Wildfire, you keep four characters.
Yeah.
Board advantage.
This is it.
Oh, I'll give you guys all a hint. When you have your opponent's board down to just Fast Eddie and nobody else, and you flip March to the Wall, and they flip A Time for Wolves, don't, for the love of God, let them go first.
Oh, no.
I did that against my friend Alfredo, and all of a sudden, Summer's out there, and Summer gets marched, and he put, you know, Arya or somebody back in his hand, and I was like, damn it! Why? Why did I do that?
I had a similarly awful moment where I knew Wildfire was coming next turn. For some reason, I didn't bounce a Messenger Raven because I'm a complete idiot. And then I flip building orders because I want to go get an attachment, a Milk of the Poppy. And then I choose myself to be first player. Or no, he chooses me to be first player because he needs me to be first player. And I have his Wildfire go off first, killing his bastard daughter. Or my building orders go off first. His bastard daughter dies to the Wildfire and discards the Milk of the Poppy that I just picked up.
Oh.
Like, completely stupid. I should have had a Messenger Raven, an additional card, and a Milk of the Poppy in my hand to handle that game. And I just loved it completely.
Little mistakes, big impacts.
Yeah.
Speaking of mistakes, I do remember another game I had, and I'd be remiss not to mention this. I played Alex Godlovich from Montreal, a good friend of mine, and he basically came to the tournament not being...
The Half-Man.
Yeah, the Half-Man. He was the...
He was literally the reason was 35 point, or 45, whatever it was, yeah, 0.5, right?
44.5. Yeah, I think he requested that. A few people chanted Half-Man at that point. So I think the reason why he came was to help out numbers and Julian. He's not really a big fan of the game right now. And I've complained to him a lot about certain cards. So as we sit down, he's like, oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. We're gonna have a lot of fun. I put cards in here that you specifically hate, and I'm only playing them because you hate them. So... We sit down and I'm playing Robert out, and I've got Robert with a dupe, and he manages on turn one to put a tears. He tears his Robert, and then he pillages with the mountain, and he pulls out Selmy, who's in my hand, and kills Robert, so I dupe save, but now Robert's essentially going to be dead no matter what, right? And Selmy's in the dead. And then turn afterwards, he goes heads on spikes, which of course is another card I hate. So now he's used the mountain and...
That's a lot of RNG.
And he pulls Davos, who was dancing and saving me from dying, essentially. Even though I have Selmy, who's already dead, in hand, and like I'm pleading with him with my eyes, like, take that one. That was a horrible match. It was actually really close. I think all of my games I ended with 13 or 14 power, just missing the final mark. But that was an especially painful game because of the mountain and heads on spikes. It was also a really sloppy game because he wanted to have like a friendly conversation with me. I suspect mostly because he knows I play like total.
Yeah, Sean doesn't do well talking when you play him. So if you want to mess him up at Gen Con, just, you know, say hi. Basically, that's enough.
John, you're giving away all our secret tech.
Remember that time I showed you my breast and you got super distracted, Sean?
I don't want all of the men at Gen Con to show me their breasts. Don't listen to
me. Or do you? Or do you?
They missed the conversation prior to this, but this would make sense.
That's okay. They don't need to make sense.
It may not make sense. It's still entertaining.
Yeah. And just remember, Sean, it comes from a can.
What?
Okay. So I think that was enough on the tournament report. But I want to give a shout out to the Montreal meta and Julian for throwing such a great tournament. He always throws a fantastic event. I've been there for 4 years now. Luckily, I've been able to either take it down or get close to the in the cut each time. But he's, you know, a very good TO, strict by the rules, so Alex would love it. And the game store itself is quite a good location. All right, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. We're about to do a chapter pack review. John, as a guest, you get to pick what persona you want to take on. I'm assuming it's going to be like the administrator of the Citadel or something because of your role and then you got 2.0 goat. Is that true?
Well, I do feel like a maester sometimes with everything that I do to help people out, but I'm definitely a Jamie player, and given that this is my first Beyond the Wall chapter pack review, I should probably stick with what I know and not get too fancy.
That's awesome. So, Sean, being the only lady, are you going to be Cersei?
I like that idea, but I think I'm going to steal your role, and this time I'm going to be Thoros of Myr and judge all the melee cards. Not that melee is going to be much of a thing after Jaina.
I know. When they wrote that back on Twitter to me saying that there's no prizes for melee, basically, no card design, it made me cry inside.
A sad farewell.
Yeah. Alex?
Well, I'm going to be bringing on the Nedley perspective of cards that embody the books or the source material.
I'm going to change it up this week. I'm going to be not just the mountain, but the zombie mountain.
You're going to be Sir Robert Strong?
No, I'm being zombie mountain. Don't confuse me.
Okay, and what player type does zombie mountain... What kind of cards does zombie mountain talk about?
Stuff that kills stuff, just like the mountain, but like stronger, because he's already dead.
Right, then.
All right.
So that's an awful explanation.
All now, right. Normally we don't make the guests go first. We let them go second or third. And I always tend to go last, but I'm actually, for a very good reason, going to go first this time with my first Nedley pick, partly because it's probably on Sean's list as well. But I'm going to start with this is the second cycle. It embodies the second book. And the very first words in the second book are, "The comet's tail spread across the dawn, a red slash that bled above the crags of Dragonstone like a wound in the pink and purple sky." This is the dragon's tail. It's the neutral event that gets you and an opponent to each draw two cards. And I think it's not only because it's breaking from the order in which you'd expect a neutral card to be, it's the first card in the chapter pack when you open it, just like Will was for the first cycle, being the first character in the prologue of the first book, but also it's got this sort of, in the books, the dragon's tail, this comet, means something different to everybody around. It's everybody seems to think that, oh, crimson is the Lannister color, and it's good sign for the Lannisters, or it's a sign of blood, and therefore it's good for the Targaryens, or it's, you know, rusted iron or something. Everybody seems to think that it's good for them. And the fact that the dragon's tail is this sort of attempt at scrying the future and hoping that the same two things from your deck and from their deck is better for you than your opponent, I think is a really Nedley hit for a card that is, you know, that they broke from their pattern to place first in the pack and first in the book. I like it when they can do that. It's very meta. It makes no difference to the play of the game that they reordered the pack for that. But it's just a nice little touch.
Absolutely. And you know it's in my melee list. I think this is the quintessential melee card. The thing that we've been looking for since, first edition, where you used to have sort of like a summons where you would give your opponent card as well. That's a sense of trading. So if I'm sitting down at the melee table and I have one of these in my hand, I might look around at people and say, okay, well, what can you do for me? I can give you two cards right now. That trading
so
favors.
You're saying this is, we've been waiting for this since first edition. You know this card was in first edition.
No, I mean since first edition was rebooted.
Oh, okay.
Since the start of second edition of Melee, there hasn't been a whole sense of
a lot of trading.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a little in that there are cards that interact with other people's challenges and other people's characters, like Marjorie. And in Melee games, I'm frequently, you know, getting people to buff my own characters with their Marjorie or vice versa. But yeah, this card is definitely reminiscent of the trading effects in first edition.
Mm-hmm. I think before this pack came out, those trading effects were more like bullying or screwing the leader, where you could pump someone with Marjorie to stop the winning challenge from going over, or you could use the redirect effect to stop them from getting their winning challenge, or canceling effects on their turns and stuff like that. But this is sort of like a beginning of the game. We have a blank slate. And I'm sitting down with some strangers, who's going to be my friend? Who's going to do me a favor a good turn later on in exchange for a couple cards?
And it's also worth noting that just the strict maths of it, if this card just said draw two cards for yourself, it would be amazing. It would thin your deck and it would be fantastic. It doesn't, but giving your only opponent two cards is tricky to manage unless you can manipulate reserve or ensure that the top two cards of their deck are crap or whatever. Giving one of your three opponents two cards is a lot less dangerous.
Yeah, you look for the least threatening one or the one that's behind.
Yeah, and in fact, helping someone who's behind generally improves
good
melee
for you and melee. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can also help someone who's ahead, though, and just make them a bigger target. I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can play this card.
My biggest complaint about the card is that it's an interesting card, but it effectively costs me a card to draw two cards, so my opponent is actually sort of, in a way, gaining more than I am.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's bad and jost.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if you're really digging for a combo card or whatever, it might eventually be good in Joust, like some other ones were. But yeah, I agree.
Because you are effectively cutting your deck at that point. You might as well be running it. If you see all three of them, you're effectively running a 57-card deck.
Just play all three in a row, and then make your opponent's hand way over his reserve and laugh at him when he has to take 5 minutes to discard six cards.
Right, and then he keeps his best five cards in his entire deck.
Semantics.
Bit of a problem.
You won by decking him, Alex. He doesn't get to keep anything you've won.
Oh, that's it's a over. Good point, actually, in the decks that will use Mill as a win condition.
Get some Dragon's Tail, some Reader, and some Loot.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Black Winds Crew.
There you go.
There's all kinds of good stuff. So, John, what's a Jamie card?
What is a Jamie card? I think the Janos Slint is a pretty interesting Jamie card. I didn't run him in the tournament at BD Cosmos because, again, I went in expecting lots of Stark, and he has 2 strength, which means that he can get eaten for breakfast by a Grey Wind. But he's definitely an interesting card. I think he may be a bit of a trap in that you're constantly sinking gold into the guy to do stuff. But when you can take him and, let's just say Tywin or, you know, Tyrion with stealth on an intrigue challenge and win an intrigue challenge by 6 or 8 or 10, you can intimidate some pretty big characters. And, you know, with Tyrion giving you 2 gold, you can effectively pump him up to a 6 strength every turn if you wanted to off of the intrigue challenge. And win intrigue challenges whereas you wouldn't have been able to, or intimidate things that, you know, like say Asha's out there and you've got no answers for her because she's got stealth and raiding longships out. If you can go first and intimidate them, yeah, Tyene would be a great target since she's only 3 strength, you know, or even Miri, something like that. But I had a game I played when I was playing Lannister Dragon where I didn't see a lot of big characters, but I had Aelin Payne and Magister Illyrio out, and I kept using Aelin Payne's ability and then standing him in the marshalling phase and then killing somebody again. At one point, my opponent had like 16 characters that had 3 strength or less in his dead pile and nothing else. But I realized that after 4 turns that I was spending all my money on that, which was fun, but didn't really help my board all that much. So I sort of worry that the same thing will happen with Janice Slint here. But who knows?
So he was on my list as well. Obviously, he's a killing machine with Intimidate, a military icon, and Loyal. But I have to agree with you, John. I'm surprised you chose him as a Jamie card, because my first impression is that he looks good, but that he's not a super high-end card. I can see him going like one of in a lot of decks for that Intimidate, but because of the flaws you pointed out with Grey Wind, with the fact that you have to spend so much gold on him, that he's a pretty big investment early game for something that doesn't give you strong board presence right away, that, you know, that turn 2 when you have to spend your gold on more characters, he's only going to be that 2 strength, makes him tougher to play in multiple copies.
Yeah, well, to be honest, this pack doesn't have a lot of Jamie cards in my opinion, so I picked ones that were, you know, like I'm a Lannister player for the most part, so Janos Slint is definitely interesting to me. I was trying to go for, you know, like Pike is a good Jamie card because it's just a really good card, but there's really not that much to say about it. It's just, hey, that guy's got stealth. Cool. Good stuff. You know, so I was figuring that I'd go for stuff that actually might have some conversation involved with them. So,
they're more like a banter. I don't know what the equivalent would be. Someone who talks a lot. I agree. I think that card's more of a Shaga card.
Sure.
It's a big effect. It can swing the table, but I don't know how efficient it is.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying gold for an effect that doesn't directly lead to removal, right? You know, soft Intimidate is soft control. And that's fine. But the only time I've played against him recently, I got a milk on him after my opponent saved 5 gold because it was his only character.
Oh, dear.
I played Janos and he had 5 gold and it's like, I got this. And then I milk him and he goes, I don't got this. So,
yeah, that's rough.
He certainly isn't fantastic in that sense, yeah. So I guess that brings it back to me, right?
I haven't gone yet, but...
No, you had the...
Go back. I suppose mine was duplicated. Can I give an original answer, or John's just going to keep saying mine? Out of spite for me.
I didn't say any. It was Alex that said yours.
Yeah. Just say ditto, and we'll go to the next card, no problem.
Yeah, so why don't you go, Sean? we'll let you go, and then I'll go, and then that way we each get to say one original.
That sounds good. Well, now I got to remember what my answer was. Okay, Tower of the Sun. I think that's a great melee card. I think you're going to be able to trigger it multiple times in a round, since it's limited only one per phase, especially with the existence of Dragon Tail. So what you can do is you can kind of feel out your opponent, see who's playing Dragon Tail this round, maybe save yours for an awkward phase like plot phase or draw phase, and really maximize the amount of gold you get.
Yeah, actually, in Melee, I can definitely see this one being a very reliable, non-limited economy.
Yeah, you're more likely to see an event played each phase, or, you know, in more phases when there's four players than two.
I would agree, but Melee decks right now are playing all, like, power capture challenge phase effect. I can't think of a lot of, I mean, maybe some Neil in the marshalling phase, but in general, it's mostly events in the challenge phase, isn't it? All the top Melee decks?
I mean, yeah, that's fair. That's fair to say, but they're not all going to be top Melee decks, John. There will be other decks running other
games. Oh, right. Some people don't play competitive Melee.
There's Baron the Maiden Fair, which is not a terrible card to stack up your own board position.
Yeah, there's some, yeah.
Every time someone plays Gift of the Arbor Red, you're like, yes, I get a gold. Oh, yeah. Woo!
Yep. It's true.
I think it'll be interesting. It would be a fun card that I think most people would forget about, and you'd just be pocketing gold in the background.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's loyal. It costs two, so you're paying one for it in Martell Fealty. If somebody plays an event, it could be you. It's paid for itself. So every point, every event from that point on is gravy.
Yeah.
I'd rather pay two for Gastrin Grey than that. You know, you can have both, I guess.
You can't always draw your three Gastrin Greys.
But maybe you couldn't afford it. And then you play Dragon's Tail, you get Gastrin Grey, you have the gold. Dream situation.
There you go.
So something that a lot of people forget about the Mountain is that he is so destructive that he doesn't just destroy people, and he can destroy places. And that's actually why
I was wondering how you were going to pitch this, because I knew you were going to talk about this card. I just didn't know what your intro was going to be.
And actually, I think this is a Jamie card. Even though it's 5 cost for a 2-strength intrigue icon, people are like, what? Why? I think he's a very real answer to some locations that some factions have no answers to. So because of that, I think he's going to see his way into some Jamie decks in order to deal with these big locations. And he might not be in the right place in the meta right now to shine as a Jamie card, but I think he will be at some point in the future. So that's why I chose him.
I think he's great, and I think you're right. I think we talked about Political Disaster being a sort of release valve for the game. I think this card is too, and even more so than Political Disaster.
Yeah, political disaster is like Wildfire, where you keep all your best stuff, whereas the Pyromancers are more like a targeted kill, right? Mm-hmm. You kill their best thing, it's your choice, and they can...
You need political dancers, because in 1.0 we had this deck that played no characters, just boats. We'd play like 50 boats and beat you with their boats, and it was the most annoying thing in the world until you had something like Political Disaster.
Hmm. I think this card, though, is really hurt even more than by the low strength, by the icon, by the high cost, is it doesn't have no attachments. You know, if I put milk on this card, you're really sad.
Well, it's just like Varus, right? But on the other hand, when Varus gets treacheried, it hurts you a lot more than when the Pyromancer get treacheried.
True.
I mean, all you do is you lose a power.
Thankfully, they're not sacrificed to remove
it. Yes.
You say, yeah, next Dominance, I'll do it again.
I think the Pyromancer, as a Jamie player, I think the Pyromancers probably fit best in either a Lannister deck or a Tyrell deck because of their economy, although Tyrell's not particularly great. Or one of the best plays I could think of is if you have Ariane in your deck, and just before the end of the challenges, you jump these guys in instead of her, and then just go Dominance action and kill Winterfell or something, or the Wall or something like that.
Yes. I'm going to make a prediction now. You said Tyrell's not great. I'm going to make a prediction that a Tyrell deck will make top 16 at Gen Con.
I see.
That's my prediction.
Yeah, but you're also predicting the name of that player.
See, I can tell you the name of the individual that's going to be playing that deck as well, yes.
And we know the name
James
of the deck.
James Walmsley is going to be hanging out with us.
Nice.
We're not going to say the name of the deck because it gives away a little bit of information.
No, I understand. I'm just
saying. But, he will make top 16 playing Tyrell.
Sounds good. Can't wait to see it.
All right, so we're back to me, and I have two Nedley cards that come at it from the same angle, so let's maybe start one that's probably on nobody else's list. Robb Stark. This is the king that we've seen spoiled a while ago.
Who kills shit? Who kills shit?
He doesn't kill shit.
He's war Robb. Which kills shit, Alex.
Yeah, he's
got lots of swords on his card. It can't be bad, right?
He is filled with swords, and he is a mountain of a man.
He does have three swords on that card.
He looks like he's got a migraine, though.
How could you think that that would not be on my list with all those swords?
I just didn't think it would be on.
He doesn't have targeted kill right on the card, so
it says remove people from challenges so you can kill shit. Get more strength so you can kill shit. He can get as big as the mountain with the right loyal cards.
Yeah, he's already six in a military challenge by himself. But I do also want to comment that he's one of the first Robb Starks we've seen that may actually be the right age.
Oh yeah, because he's like 16 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that too, which I think is a nice Nedley win as well. So props to the artist. But I like a lot about this card. You know, people will say that it suffers mostly from not being the right name because the other Robb Stark is so good. I do think this card has a place in the competitive game, but from a Nedley standpoint, you're talking about someone who wins military challenges, who wins them easily, who works off the characters that have sworn loyalty to him, that there's already specifically that within the books, and even that action is a sign of a very tactical mind. You know, sending Bolton's army to go slow things down, or, you know, attacking an army when it's not ready, or a feint. All these other strategies, and you can do that. You can send Robb Stark and Osha and another character, and then he decides not to block, and you pull Osha and the other character back out of the challenge and have him standing. So committing the right amount of strength that you need for the put to the swords or for whatever it is you want to do, he seems very Nedley in that he's not just winning military challenges, he's doing it sometimes with finesse. And so I like that, and I like a new take on Robb.
I love that example you gave, because a lot of people don't realize that that ability he has, you can not just use it on your opponent and remove them from military challenge so you can win and kill stuff, but you can use it on your own guys so that they can stand so that during your multiple military challenge, they can come back and kill more stuff again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really like the part where he gets stronger for the loyal character he has. I think Robb's real strength comes from the loyalty of his men, right? It's when they all start to, King of the North, that's when he starts to collect his
power. For sure. Yeah. What's scary for me is that it's not just plus one strength for each loyal character in the challenge. It's just that you control. And the Starks are just full of, you know, little weeny unique characters. Oh, sorry, loyal characters, my bad. But there's a lot of loyal characters as well.
The sense of an insight that I like that one. Yeah, there's quite a lot of loyal. Summer.
Yep.
Kate, Kat.
Yeah.
And there'll be more. Like, the longer the game goes, the more loyal characters we'll get, and the more powerful he'll be. So maybe you'll even hit a point where you have so many loyal characters in your deck, you'll play them over the other Robb. Probably not, but maybe.
Standing your entire board is pretty powerful, and always will be. That's going to be hard to come across.
Not counting duplicates, and not counting duplicated characters, you can have 11 different characters that are loyal in your Stark deck.
So Robb can outstrength the mountain.
Yep.
No, we can't.
And you could have multiples of those. So you could have multiple Bear Island loyalists.
Oh, that's true.
Over 15.
Yeah, but that would never happen. It's not possible because the mountain destroys all.
But you can't.
I mean, Robb could get powerful like that, and the mountain could have Widow's Wail and some other weapon on him.
All right, shall we move on? John, do you want to give us a second Jamie card then?
Sure. Well, since you already went for Robb Stark, I'm going to go for River Run because I think that's a really interesting card that has a place in Stark Power Rush decks. I know there aren't a lot of targets for it right now. I guess I should explain what it says. It's basically after a power is gained by our move to a House Tully character, you kneel River Run and get another power. It's limited in that you can only do it once per turn. But I mean, if you've got the Blackfish out, he can win two challenges and have four power on him with River Run, and then you've got your Tully non-kneeling engine going. If you've got the Wolves of the North Catelyn, every time, you know, once a turn when someone is killed or sacrificed, she gains two power.
And two strength.
And two strength. And I mean, it works. There aren't that many House Tully characters, but I mean, it'll work off of Blackfish's renown. It works off of Wolfcat's ability. If you have Fast Eddie putting, you know, using his reaction to put power on Tully characters, there's the minstrels. You know, there's a lot of options. I was playing a game at one point where the Blackfish had seven power on him, like turn three or four or something like that, and it was scary how fast that person was ripping through stuff. I actually built a Stark Tully Rose deck to try to just go for ridiculous power rush. And like the first turn, we each had three characters or something like that. And he just sort of went all in with all his characters to get challenges. And I ended up with something like 8 or 9 power at the end of the first turn because of it, with Lady Sansa's Rose and River Run and Fast City and stuff like that. It's scary.
I think it can go even beyond that. I'm willing to predict that with the next chapter pack, because we've already seen Winter Festival spoil.
Oh yeah.
I think there's a serious Stark Rush deck starting next chapter pack, and that River Run is in it.
I can see it. Yeah. And it's not loyal, but it's only 2. So.
Well, and a lot of the Tullys are loyal. Cat's loyal. Blackfish is loyal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that, it limits your ability to use it if you're.
Oh, I just meant that it doesn't cost 1 in a fealty deck. But yes,
right, but if you're already playing Blackfish the next turn, or you're playing King.
Right, but it's quasi-loyal because it only works with Tully characters, and I think you can bring Minstrels and Septims and Tumblestone Knights, and none of those really have...
Minstrels are getting power, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you really can't relying on Fast Eddie to put power
on. You could also play Attorney for the King, or for the Hand, rather.
Oh, and give the Little Knights, nice. That's right.
Sure.
Renown.
I mean, that sounds pretty janky, but yeah, you could do that.
Sounds pretty rushy.
When I first read it, I thought that when it said gain by, I thought that it meant that when the House Tully character has won a power challenge, but I read the definition in the RRG of gain by, and sadly that is not the case.
Someone read the Reels reference guide.
I do it all the time.
You, John.
John, don't. Okay, stop. We're not going to allow you on the cast anymore if you talk to Alex like that. That basically makes him cream in his pants. He has to do laundry now. It's awkward.
We're taking a break. We're actually gonna redo the edit this cast. We're gonna take out all references to John and
commenting on happy rules and how Sad Alex wrote the rules.
It's gonna all be right. A really weird cast where it's one sided.
While I'm riding this high, I guess we can go on to Sean. Do you want to give us a second?
I do. So this next card is, I think, mostly good for melee, but may see some play for Joust, mostly with tricks. That's Varys Riddle.
I love this card.
I love this card, too.
Varys Riddle, awesome initiative, awesome gold. And that effect, I think, on turn 2 is about perfect. Turn 1, you're risking it, I think, but you could probably play it turn 1, too. And being able to copy someone's summons or calling the banner, I mean, that's the one I'm really looking forward to. I'm looking forward to getting, 10, 11 golds just copying their calling and having that high initiative. I mean, same initiative as calling, but...
This card is good in Greyjoy, man. This is going to be good in Greyjoy Go First decks, in Joust, for sure. The reserve is great. The claim, it's gold. It's a good opener. Like, you can open with this on people that you're worried about Naval, but you can keep it for other games where you don't think they're going to have Naval. You can keep it for later to copy their county and their summons, their whatever.
The danger, though, is copying their treading the Pentoshi and giving them...
That's not a huge drawback. You're worse... copying their Fallen from Favor if they're running that.
Yes.
Far Behind the Throne, which nobody's running, but you don't really want to copy that because you have to put the power token on their Far Behind the Throne. I'm not all that worried. Pentoshi generally giving someone who already has 10 gold another 3 gold is not the end of the world.
It's the start of the world, though.
It's okay. I see.
Yeah, the majority of the when revealed abilities are good, definitely, for you to trigger.
I also like the 7 reserve as an early card. Mm-hmm. I've been using this in my Night's Watch deck. But my favorite play with this card is as a screen for a single setup character.
Yes, because you can open with it safely, and if they march, cover it, you nuke their board.
Yeah,
totally agree. Coster, and then if they try to march, yeah. It's rude.
Unless they set up 3 characters, and then you are sad.
Well, that's fine. They've still lost 2 characters in eliminating yours. Yep. And if they didn't flip March, then you kept your character. Or if they didn't have March.
And you have gold.
Unless you have gold, better initiative, better reserve.
No, probably better initiative at 6.
Well, if they're marching, they'll have
it. We said if they didn't march, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a game in the Holt Regional where at one point I was playing against I was playing Lenny Rose deck, I think, and I had Jamie and the Knight of Flowers. This was mid-game. And my opponent had just done First Snow and got me down to those 2 characters. So I was worried about March the next turn. He had Tywin with 2 dupes and Seal of the Hand on him with 5 power on him and a Lannisport Merchant. And I was like, man, I really, really want to play March of the Wall right now. but I don't want it to look like a total chump if he doesn't march. That would be in the perfect time to play Varys' Riddle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah.
And he did march me. So I was just like, ah!
I also really like the art on this. When you're talking about something abstract like the, like a riddle or like the song Bear and the Maiden Fair, these sort of tapestry-like things really work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think this one almost made my Nedley list. It was my fourth card there. The riddle is about who holds the actual power. This card doesn't do anything by itself.
Yep.
Right? It's not... The power isn't in this card. It's in what the other people, you know, think to do. And
it's true.
I like that sort of meta nod as well. So I really... This is... It's my favorite card of the pack. Not necessarily the strongest. I think there's another card that's stronger. But just it hits the right notes on so many levels. So I'm glad you mentioned it.
I know that I've used all my cards, but I want to talk about Arya a little bit because she's just so powerful, I think, for the Night's Watch. I think
Ari?
Yeah, that's the one. Sean, yeah, you know.
They're totally
that's
different
right.
people. You're talking about Ari, not Arya.
Yeah, right. Ari is a boy.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So the boy Night's Watch, I think he is extremely fantastic in the fact that you can ambush him in to, you know, stop some of those stealth challenges, that you can use him for card draw, that he's loyal so he can be reduced. I really think that he's a great card for the Watch, and he's got these nice icons for them. I think he'll add a lot to the Watch. And then, of course, we have the White Tree, since we're talking about the Watch, which may be the first step in opening up a choke deck for the Watch.
Mm-hmm. I think Ari and the Mountain, or sorry, not the Mountain, the Hound, the Mountain's brother, could really get up to some shenanigans.
Yeah. I will go so far as to say that Ari is better than the Hound.
I agree. I think, obviously, strength, Hound is better, and that's sometimes his penchant is coming in on massive strength and stopping a put or enforcing a put. But Ari is not only card advantage, but you can control when she returns.
Yeah,
and
so even if you lose a challenge, you can still bounce her.
That's true.
She doesn't get stuck on the board as often.
Yeah, you always have her in hand for the Wildfire.
And I don't think it's that hard to afford them both. Between Tyrion, the White Tree, and the Ranger, that old hunter,
mm-hmm.
I think you can make enough gold on the fly, especially because Ari's providing you cards every time.
Yep.
Well, and unlike the Hound, she costs 4, which means she's not going to get killed by Illyn Payne or bounce back to your hand from Wildfire. Night's Watch doesn't have many intrigue icons that can last through... Night's Watch doesn't have many intrigue icons that can last through First Snow, if I recall. Her and Will? Maybe.
They actually have trouble with intrigue icons. It's their weakest icon type that I found. So I think she really shores that up.
Oh, you know, it's even grosser is Castle Black with Ari. You don't expect them to have the intrigue icon. She comes on the board, plus 2 restand.
Yeah. Oof. Castle Black is a good card.
All right. So that's everyone has given at least 2 cards, right? Or Sean has, and then John has given all 3 as his fake third. So that brings me to my actual third, which will be Viserys Targaryen, another king. He's a nobody who's trying to accumulate power. He really only matters in that nobody would take him seriously, but they like to keep him around because maybe he could be used. You know, if there's a power vacuum, then maybe he could be used to fill it. But he's still a bloody nuisance to other kings just by the fact that he's still alive. And when you initially play against him, I bet if you're not running any kings, he'll be a bit of a nuisance and not a big deal. And if you are playing kings, you'll be calling Viserys a nuisance as well, because he's pulling you into challenges and messing up the way you get to use your big expensive 6 or 7 coster. And I think that's fitting. Viserys is far away. He's not winning challenges. He's not really threatening your game. What he's doing is he's something you can't ignore. He's a little gadfly off in the distance that eventually you send assassins to go kill.
What scares me is if you've got Daenerys out and he pulls in a 5 strength king.
That's a Dracarys waiting to happen.
You can Dracarys that king right away, like the new Rob. He's only a 5 strength in a power challenge. Viserys only has a power icon. When you bring him in, force him to come in, you can just Dracarys King Rob and see you later, buddy.
I think this Viserys is actually it's a good card even right now, with the one caveat that it has the name Viserys, and the other one is so good. But I think as more people play kings, he will be interesting to mess up game plans. So
I think the biggest problem with this version of him is that the power goes on him and not on your house card.
That is,
I guess he'd probably cost more if it went on your house card, but like you know, if you're playing and your opponent Wildfires, do you really want to keep him over someone that can actually win a challenge? I don't know. Probably not.
No. He also doesn't play nicely with Blood, Legacy of the Blood.
Yes.
Legacy of the Dragon. Can't remember what it's called.
Yeah. So who are we on to now? Does John still have another Jamie card that we haven't talked about?
Sure. I was going to talk about the White Tree originally, but I picked a different one just because. My third Jamie card will be Harmon Uller.
Okay.
Because he's strong fundamentals. He is a renowned character all the time, which Martell doesn't really have. He's a lord. He's got military power icons, which again is not something they're particularly strong in. And his ability gives shenanigans, and I love shenanigans. He has an ability where each Sand Snake character in your hand gains Ambush X, and X is one less than the card's printed cost. So if you're worried about first snow turns that your opponent throws on you as a Lannister player, you've got Burn Men. If Harmon Uller's out, you've got Bastard Daughters, which are amazing because they're half the price of a Burn Man if he's out, and when you claim them, your opponent loses a card at random. It's fantastic. You can ambush in. He's also effectively an economy card too. You know, you can, if you're okay waiting until the challenges phase and you're not worried about getting milked or something like that and losing your ability, you can put in Nymeria for 4 or Tyene for 5 and that sort of thing. So it's kind of interesting because it's also repeatable in that sense.
This is an odd one because it looks fantastic on paper and you might go so far as to say, okay, you probably need one more Sand Snake in your deck, and once they print another one, you'll be in better shape. You know, you're maybe just a bit short of being able to use him twice in a game reliably, and so maybe you sort of treat him as a 5-coster that ambushes them something. But I've had 2 people I trust play this card in their decks and for many games and go, every time I see him, I wish he was someone else. and I think that may just be because you need, you know, the 1 extra or 2 extra Sand Snakes to end up that economy. But you're right, really strong fundamentals. I still haven't had a chance to play with him, but I look at him and I go, this is a good card. And if friends of mine hadn't told me, you know, I'm not convinced that I would be on board with you.
Well, I think the biggest problem with the card is that most of the successful Martell decks are not fealty. They're not just Martell characters. And so you don't normally run Bastard Daughters, and you don't normally run Doran, right? And Doran can be amazing for him because he's a lord. So, you know, if you're running into a Martell fealty deck, which if it ever picks up steam or there's some, you know, some key Sand Snake characters that get released, then I think he could be really excellent. He has the potential to be a very, very good card. It's just a matter of, you know, at this point in the meta where most people are running like Martell Lion or something like that, your cost curve is already high enough. You probably don't want to put another 6-cost Martell card in, but
I think he suffers from a similar problem to Mance Raider, who, although Mance obviously has much more exaggerated problems, being a much more expensive character and a non-reducible character, I think he'll only get stronger with the card pool increasing. So right now they're just being choked by the limited amount of Sand Snakes and Wildlings. But yeah, I definitely think that's a Jamie future card. Future Jamie.
Yeah, I mean, especially with, you know, if there's a bunch of Sand Snakes that are released, you got your ambush, but also Nymeria gives them all the icon that you steal. Mm-hmm. That can get, you steal somebody's military icon, and then all of a sudden 7 of your characters have military icons. You can put to the sword just about anybody you want. So it can get pretty interesting.
All right, and that just leaves us with a Thoros of Mir card, if you still have one.
I've named 3.
Oh, but you have? That's right, because I
could name another one if you want.
No, we're good.
Closing comments, folks. I hear there's a tournament this coming weekend.
Ooh, I know which one it is.
You do?
Yep.
I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, so it's a small tournament in Spain. I think the city starts with a P.
Oh, you're thinking of Padis having their weekly tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah, Padis is the name of the store, but nice try.
Super close. Super close. And that's really exciting, right? Right, guys?
I was referring to this tournament that was going to be increased in prestige because you're going to be there, Sean. Because Sean's going to be there, it's going to be a prestigious
I'll be
tournament.
Signing autographs.
You'll be signing autographs.
Find me at one of the tables, the FFG table. If you recognize me, I'll sign your cards. Big black magic marker or whatever, Sharpie. Whatever card you want. Be warned, though, my signature is just me scrawling, like,
as hard as I can from edge to edge.
So that's all that's going to be, a big black line.
Yeah, but so it will be really recognizable.
So you guys are staying, well, I would say the name of the hotel, but you're not staying at the hotel. You're staying at the bar right next to it, the Casablanca?
It's connected to it. It shares the same parking lot.
We're staying at Casablanca, and me and Sean are sharing a room. We've established goals that vomit has to stay in the toilet, though, and that's basically the only rule.
That's the only rule.
I guess, you guys, it's your fault for not making that rule last time.
I know. I'm regretting it.
Yeah, I thought ahead this time. And Sean's sleeping in a bed this time. That's a big thing for him.
I'm a grown-up now.
Yeah, it's better than the bathroom.
So, yeah, we're going to Gen Con. We're pretty pumped. We're still deciding between what, Sean, you're picking between two decks? Me too.
I'm still deciding between two decks.
One of them is the same deck. So, like, we could end up playing the same deck, but mm-hmm. we could also end up playing two completely different decks that don't overlap at all.
I feel like we should play the same deck but change one plot so that if anyone tries to scout us and figure out what we're doing,
we'll confuse them with that one plot.
Exactly.
So okay, Alex, one plot I'm thinking name of. A plot I should play.
A plot you should play? Fortified position.
All right.
I could have said something much more. I really like Fortified. It's one of my
name one for
plot.
Sean.
Feast for Crows.
Why do you hate me?
I don't. Yeah. That's also a great plot.
You could have given something like Here to Serve. That would have really sucked. It. But I have no Maesters in my deck. You have to play that plot anyways.
Yeah, no, I look forward to a lot of news out of Gen Con. Will you guys get a chance to go to the... No, you probably won't. The in-flight report? I think it's during the joust, isn't it?
Yeah, we can't go to the in-flight report. I'm going to take my hand recorder around, though, and talk with people, and me and Sean are going to be doing some recording while we're down there.
You've claimed you were going to do this for the last 3 years now.
We actually have done this in the car, but we were so tired and cranky that after listening to it, I realized that that wasn't right for our fans, that we couldn't do that to them, so I deleted it.
Adam, the lost episode.
Do you guys have any sort of expectations? I think this is probably a good time to mention it. Out of what you expect FFG to announce related to Thrones or their CCGs or LCGs, or what you expect from the tournament, what you expect, just any Gen Con expectations, aside from the drinking and the bar and meeting good people.
Yeah, the joust is already sold out, so I think we're going to be over capacity, because I know at least five or six other people that are going down hoping to get tickets at the last minute. So I think we're going to stay at least at that 200, maybe exceed it, which is fantastic. I think I mentioned already, I expect a lot of Martell. I think they're in a good place in the meta right now. I think they're one of the stronger houses, so I think we're going to see Martell Lion and Martell Fealty at maybe 20% of the field. We're going to see some Stark Fealty too, because it's very, very powerful, but it does get pushed out by that Martell, and then a whole bunch of different flavors of Lanny. That's my expectations overall.
I think Jon Snow is going to shake up the meta, and I don't mean core Jon Snow. No, I mean core Jon Snow. That's what
you mean. All right.
Night's Watch Offensive. It's the deck to beat right now.
I bet you will not beat a deck running core Jon Snow at Gen Con.
I would also make that bet.
The first round is my chance for that, basically. The one person in the tournament, if I get matched up with them. Joe from Cincinnati, are you going to be there?
1 in 200. Roll the dice, Sean. Roll the dice. What else do you expect, Sean?
I think you said it. And I expect a lot of Lanny Kraken, Lanny Dragon, since they perform so well.
Yeah. With the melee being so played down, I think we're going to see a lot of people actually not playing it that had planned to, because they thought there was a card design on the line that we're going to take it seriously. And I think people are going to be playing it more for funsies and joking around and not taking it seriously. I know I'm not going to go, and I'm not even assembling a real melee deck at this point now, because I'll follow FFG's lead and realize that melee is no longer a competitive format.
That's true. I think
there goes your chance.
We'll see numbers in melee attendance, I think.
What about news from FFG with regards to either their card game, their distribution, their the upcoming packs and things like that?
Oh, well, they'll be announcing version 3. It's going to be a whole new reboot.
It's going to be a CCG, right?
In a year, it'll come out as a CCG.
No, I don't expect any huge announcements. We kind of already know what the next box sets that are coming up. We know there's another cycle coming, so there's nothing big there. I think they're going to talk a lot about their new collectible card game, which will be on display, and I plan to go try out to get some of the free promos.
Well, it's collectible dice kind right, of collectible cards. Dice. I mean, I guess it's got cards, yeah, collectible.
You buy booster packs with random dice in it, right?
Yeah, And this is Lucas Litzinger, the guy who was lead on Netrunner. So he certainly knows his stuff. So I don't know. The game is probably decent, but the words collectible sort of have alarm bells ringing for me. But do you expect to hear any news as it pertains to, for instance, Conquest? We've been hearing these rumors about IP conflicts. You think that they'll announce that?
Either now or at Worlds.
Yeah, I don't think they'd announce that point. If it were an issue, I think Gen Con's for the positive news. And then
I think they'll let the last three packs come out and people buy them before they before they tell everyone the game's dead.
I mean, I don't think that's wise.
Get those sales.
I mean, the sales on those packs are important, but trying to get the fans to understand what's going on and hopefully migrate them to another LCG. You know, as far as I understand it, if there is something real here, it's an intellectual property dispute with Games Workshop that's completely out of their hands because Games Workshop is changing how they handle IP. And, you know, fans will not necessarily hold that against FFG if they handle the transition well.
But it's FFG, so they won't.
That's true. They should be concerned. There's a lot of crossover between the LCGs. People do play multiple games. And I think if you burn people on one game... I know we lost a few players in Ottawa, in Gatineau specifically, because one person played two of their games that both got the axe at the same time.
Invasion and Cthulhu?
I think it was that, yeah. So, you can alienate someone from the whole model, from the whole company, if they have too much bad news all at once.
It was Thrones and Cthulhu. So Cthulhu went down and Thrones was rebooted. And they were like, frick this then.
I can see that. And you, John, you mentioned you thought the Lanny box was going to be out.
Yeah, I thought there was a good chance that it will be there. I mean, if it says it's shipping now, they probably have a bunch in-house. They almost always have had a box or something like that at Gen Con. So I just have a feeling like they'll have that.
I hope so. I think it's kind of neat. I'm actually really looking forward to it now. I was very wary about it when it was announced, and then I saw those cards that they, you know, had sort of tried to push Lanny in different directions. And I think I've had so much fun with the Stark box, really. It's so much fun that I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Lanny.
Have they said what the box after Lanny is supposed to be?
They have not.
Oh, okay.
We could guess it. I mean, let's go off base the third most popular house. What do you think? Targaryen? Baratheon?
I thought it was the order they were announced in, Wasn't Baratheon the third one that they announced? I can't actually remember.
That makes sense to me, because they also probably announced in the order of most popular.
Is Baratheon? I thought Baratheon was the fourth or fifth they announced. Can we find it?
Yes, we can find it. We can definitely find it. It's winter, so Stark was previewed first.
In honesty, I'd like to see like Tyrell
and Night's Watch. Lannister was previewed second. Night's Watch was previewed third.
So let's say Night's Watch then, because you know what? Yep. They need the most help too, so that would be awesome.
Night's Watch third. I'm willing to go with that.
Pretty cool, actually. They do need a hand right now.
Yeah. Tyrell or Night's Watch would be the best for the game, in my opinion. But
Tyrell was the last previewed, I think. Yeah, they were. All right, after Martell, Greyjoy, Targ, Vera.
I think if Night's Watch gets a box, they should get a focus on offensive cards, being able to attack. Pushing more of the defense module, I think, will just make them NPE. They're already kind of at that point with Kraven and White Tree. I don't know if you guys have played Knights.
I've played Knights Watch with Kraven, and I think that's a tier 1 deck. And I've played it without Kraven, and I think it's a tier 2 deck.
I think they're there now with this cycle, and it's going to be gross. When you play
Kraven
in a tournament,
Kraven pushes it.
They do nothing the whole game and then went off the wall. That's going to be.
That's going to make people Pyromancers.
Exactly. That's going to make people play Pyromancers.
Well, everyone will have two Pyromancers and be like, oh, you're a Night's Watch. Good, I Pyromancers the wall. What you going to do now?
It's going to make me play Greyjoy.
I have a request then, one closing request as we go to Gen Con. Can you guys try and get pictures from the draft packs so that we can spoil this? I'm sure other people will be trying as well, but I'd like to see the kinds of cards and the distribution a little bit to see what's a rare card within a pack, but also, you know, if there are draft-only cards, or if they're cards that haven't been spoiled yet. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, I think that's very feasible for us. We'll get a couple draft packs and showcase them.
Well, enjoy your Gen Con. Make sure that James Walmsley's Tyrell deck wins so people can quit whining. And the other tournament worth mentioning is mid-August, there is the amazing Championnat de France and, I believe, Fleabottom Freca.
Ah, those are both great tournaments. I hope they have good attendance.
And UK Nationals.
So we are going to try.
So there's actually quite a few big tournaments coming up.
To send you updates during the tournaments there, Alex. Hopefully some of our American friends that have phone service will be able to text you some standings and stuff so that you can get a little bit of a running commentary.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
Does it remind you of Sinbad?
Yeah, the Seven Seas?
Yeah. Because that was the picture in my head, which I think is what confused me. Yeah. But it was Sinbad sailing on his ship with you standing next to him, silent singing.
Silent singing is the best singing.
Yeah, and your little goatee, because that's like a pirate kind of goatee. It works.
I have a beard now.
Yeah, I know, but the picture in my mind was the goatee.
Wait, do you have a goatee over the beard?
No, the goatee
is hidden within the beard. Obviously.
Yeah, I can't picture you without the goatee. So I feel like within the beard, it's still there.
Yeah, it's still hidden inside. It's under. If I took off my beard, there'd be a goatee under it.
Exactly.